It's Saturday the 12th of August 2017. I'm at the Hall Paragon station and I'm making what's turned out to be my annual visit to Taiwan. I've been there at least once every year since 2003. So this time I'm going to a new place called Taichung, where one of my former PhD students, Su Pei Ye, is a lecturer, or assistant professor at least, they call them there. And I'm going to do a week of teaching and consulting about writing and publishing manuscripts there. So I'm on the way to Manchester Airport to fly to Hong Kong, land there tomorrow morning and meet my colleague, Professor Graham Smith from Napier University in Edinburgh, and then we go to Taipei and take the train down to Taichung.
Flight to Taipei and onwards to Nagoya.
Just leaving us here in Taipei. Thank you for joining us and safe travels.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Taipei. It is a safety requirement that you remain seated with your seatbelt fastened until the seatbelt sign has been turned off. Please be careful when opening the overhead compartments.
It's all right, I've got it. I'm doing it with this, okay? Can we just forget it? Just leave it. I want it off at the moment, okay? That's about the 10th time I've told him. Sorry. I'm relaxed. If you leave it alone, I've just said just leave it.
Okay. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Professor Roger Watson. Yeah, and our moderator, Professor Ma. Welcome to our conference, our workshop. And I think our topic is very important to talking about instrument development. Yeah, and I think a very reliable instrument for your major, your outcome is very important. And I hope you enjoy your today's workshop. And first, we will welcome our moderator, Professor Ma, to introduce the... Okay, good morning, everyone. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I need to make sure we have gentlemen here. Yeah. Okay, so here is another one. Okay, today I'm going to introduce you a very remarkable speaker, distinguished speaker. I have to say that. You may know this person very well in academic field, papers or journals or whatever. But today you are looking face to face to these remarkable speakers. He's very famous in Taiwan. And he is also very well known in all over the world. His name is Roger Watson. And Professor Watson, now is a professor of nursing at the University of Hull. Hull, right?
It's difficult to say.
Hull.
Hull.
Chinese people very good.
So, you know, so I will pronounce in the wrong way. Hull. He served as editor-in-chief of the Journal of Advanced Nursing. And before JAN is Stacy, I know you must know this. And I believe you all know these two journals very well. Professor was just like a legend to me. And I checked the wiki last time, and I found Professor Watson was born in Scotland. And you know the probably Braveheart made by Mel Gibson is my favorite movies. Yeah, it's a wonderful movie. Yeah, everyone told about that. The movie Braveheart made by Mel Gibson. Yeah, it's about also a legend, a person. The story. And so first he got bachelor degree in biology and a PhD degree in biochemistry. Then I don't know why he changed his mind, become a nurse. And I just asked him last night. And he told me he, as a nurse, he take care about elders. So, that's a very different story from our perspective or our experience about a professor, especially a man. Yeah. So it's a different story here. Yeah. So today. So I am very honored on behalf of School of Nursing China Medical University to introduce this remarkable speaker, Roger Watson. And his topic will be the development of the instrument interpretation of factor analysis. So let's welcome Professor Watson. And we all call him Roger.
Thank you very much. Thank you. All right, thank you very much. Can you hear me if I should? No. I don't really want to. I don't want to hold this. Let's try this. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, that's good. I like to wave my hands around. Well, thank you very much for the... Oh, the light's down a bit. Thanks very much for the introduction. That's good. You see that?
Yes.
Okay. So first of all, Hull. Everybody say Hull. Hull. Very difficult, I know, for people in China to say Hull. Well, you kindly told people where I was born. I'm glad you didn't say when I was born, because it's quite a long time ago. And the film Braveheart is not very popular in Scotland, because it was played by an Australian, you know, so we're not really very keen on Braveheart, I have to say. It's got some terrible Scottish accents in it. So, can you understand what I'm saying? Are you okay with my English? Yeah, you sure? Everyone's too polite in this part of the world to say no, but if I'm speaking too fast or you really don't understand, please just say or ask questions, and please stop and interrupt me if you can't understand. I've got a Scottish accent, so it's not quite like the English that you hear normally. And also, when I get excited, I talk very quickly, so I'll try to speak slowly. So if I'm going too quickly, just do that, okay? Right, what I want to do, I was asked to talk about development of questionnaires and factor analysis. What I'm going to do is talk about them separately. We've got a couple of hours, but we'll have a break in the middle, presumably, that people will need to get a drink or go on a break of some sort. And I will try and watch my time carefully. And what I thought I would do for a start was talk about developing diagnostic questionnaires, which are, you know, to find out if somebody's got something or hasn't got it, and then speak about factor analysis after that, because factor analysis doesn't really apply to diagnostic questionnaires, but I thought it might be interesting to look at both of these things. And so I may as well get started. I'm sure that most of you know something about developing questionnaires. I can't believe that you don't, because you're all fairly experienced. So I hope I'm not just telling you things that you already know. So already having technical problems. There we go. Yeah, that's it. I'm using my own device. I think the batteries might be running out. Okay, right. Okay, so. You know, we're used to, like, I think what most people don't think about really is we develop questionnaires in nursing, medicine, and, you know, occupational health, the other areas that are present today, to actually measure things. When we're used to measuring things physically, you know, we measure volumes and lengths and heights and weights, and we know what these things are. We've got a feel for them. And we're used to doing it all the time. You know, when you go shopping, we ask for things in terms of a weight. So what does principal components do? Well, it uses a correlation matrix to search for covariance. So a correlation matrix is simply where you line every variable up on an x-axis and also against the y-axis and correlate them together. Variable 1 on the x-axis and variable 1 on the y-axis, the correlation should be 1. Of course, this is really absolute, but you're looking at the correlation between all the variables to try and see if there's a pattern there. So that's what a correlation matrix looks like. Hope nobody's going to copy that down. I hope you'll agree that with that many variables, they're all the same. See 1 on the axis there. That's for principal components analysis. Those of you who've got a mathematical bent or know that these things, you know that principal axis factoring actually corrects the diagonal. Gives the same result, same setup time. But I think you'll agree you can't make any sense of that whatsoever. Okay? It's too difficult. You can say, well, that's correlating and that's correlating, but that's not, so that might be a fact, but you can't. Because then you've got to look at that one compared with that one, and it's just impossible. So again, this is what fact analysis does. It takes those data, press a button, tells you the answer as to whether there are dimensions there or not. So you need a computer, you need to learn how to use it, you need to put all the data in, and that's what I looked like when I was doing factor analysis. So basically what the factor analysis is telling you, what principal components analysis is telling you, is how many animals are under the water, okay? Now, these variables are all moving in the same direction, so we make the assumption that there's one animal. Basically, that's what factor analysis is doing. It's picking out and saying, this is what we're seeing. We're seeing them varying together. So factor analysis actually is a way of finding out we really are varying together. So there's one animal under the water. Here, you know, what you're seeing is they're not varying together. They're co-varying differently. So the assumption is there's two animals under the water. Here, they're all doing this. This is a visual depiction of what factor analysis is doing. You know, you're looking at these variables moving in different directions, not just three, but often groups of variables. It's giving you can't see below the water of the questionnaire to extend the network. You can only see the variable varying. So you're making the assumption, if you see this, see groups of variables doing that, you're making the assumption there's three animals on the water. Hope that wasn't too abstract. So that's the first stage. Second stage is factor extraction. I use SPSS, but I just wanted to say there are two ways to extract factors using any method. And those of you who are familiar with SPSS will know this. This is what I'm looking at. There's one way is to go on what's called the eigenvalues. The other is you can actually set the number of factors. You can say, well, I think there are three. I think there are two. You can actually vary it. But you've still got to make a judgment after you've done that as to which method you're actually going to use. So it gives you the option, usually, of setting the eigenvalues, which I'll tell you about in a second, or the number of factors. Usually, what you do for a start is you just leave the eigenvalues greater than 1, and that gives you a solution, which you can then test further to try and refine it a bit. Now, an eigenvalue is just telling you that in that factor that you're observing, there's more than one variable associated with it. The factors that feel the one variable is not really a factor. So here you go. This is the initial solution. This is not a factor solution. This is the initial unrotated correlation matrix. It's looking at different subjects: English, French, history, maths, physics, and
English, French history, maths, physics, and chemistry. And you can look at that. You can see that, well, okay, English, French, and history are kind of arty, maths, and whatever. You know, so you get one. You're getting two factors, but you can't really tell from that. You can tell intuitively, but you can't really tell from that where the factors lie. What you need to do is rotate that solution mathematically to see if you can redistribute the variance between the factors. So the step which I'm going to talk about after this, after the extraction, the rotation step, is kind of an artificial method of exaggerating where the factors are. So I've seen papers submitted to my journal. I've also refereed papers for other journals where people have run the initial unrotated solution, this one here, just the unrotated factor solution, and presented that. But you can't do that. You have to go through the step of rotation so that you can see the factors clearly. So how many factors are present? Well, again, this is in three dimensions, but the factors depend on the grouping of the items together, but you can't really tell. That's unrotated. Rotation, what rotation does visually is shoves groups of items to different corners of that diagram. So we use this. Initially, we use several methods. One is eigenvalues greater than 1. We can also use a method called the squeeze slope, or we can use a mathematical method for which the software available called parallel analysis. So we need to make a decision from the data, what you're seeing, how many factors are present. Now, none of these methods is perfect. The most common method is the eigenvalues greater than 1. I would strongly recommend people don't use eigenvalues greater than 1, because what it gives you is far too many factors. People often have a 20 item questionnaire, they find 8 factors in it. It's ridiculous. You can't possibly have 8 factors there. It just isn't conceivable. So I think eigenvalues greater than 1 is necessary for your factor to have an eigenvalue greater than 1, but don't just go by that. You've got to do other analysis. Usually, we said there, multi-method approaches enhance validity and choose context assessment of contact traffic for our schools, for our students, and in our sector. Okay, there's not, you know, we didn't do this on the basis of evidence for this, but we did this on the basis of no evidence for all the things that were going on at that particular time. So, moving forward to 2011, about 5 years, say 6 years ago, which is the last time I was involved in any work on competence, Chinese colleague Chen Yanhua and myself, when I was at the University of Sheffield, did a performed a systematic review of clinical competence assessment in nursing, which updated the 2002 review. So the 2002 review was the only review that had been done in the period. 9 years later, no other review had been done, so we did this review and only looked at the literature in the 10 years previously. So things have moved on a bit, I was glad to say. There were some developments that had not been there when we looked at it in 2002. So we screened 380 records, we got it down to 23 studies included. Basically, there was nothing that could be meta-analysed. It was an integrative, qualitative synthesis of the papers. And three categories of paper emerged in that time. There were papers on instrument development and testing, there were papers about approaches to testing and competence, and there were papers related to assessment and other factors. So you can see that the problem hasn't been solved. We're still talking about the same issues. There's no consensus yet on the best place to do it. But there was some indication of some really interesting scales which had been developed internationally, and the six these are worth having a look at actually, because they're very good. I think people have really learned to try and develop tools properly, and there is evidence for the validity and the reliability of these instruments. The six dimension scale of nursing performance, this was developed in Finland, and I think they're linked into this Cowan et al. They based their scale on that in Australia, and also the Nurses' Competency Scale by Sherwin. That was these scales were developed long before our initial review, but they've finally been tested, and there was some evidence
on these scales, but that's it. It wasn't huge, but I feel things have moved on as well. Especially something from Taiwan that you would say an APAC self-evaluated scale. But these were the ones that seemed to be of the best evidence behind them. So, conclusions of a competence measurement. I'm just going to say one thing again, one more thing after the competence measurement. Competence measurement, as I've shown, is problematic. I'm sorry I haven't given you any.
其实Roger老师他的那个图片我比较多，就是中间有一两个哈，你觉得有问题，你听不懂的，你可以先记下来，那我们讨论的时候，我们可以再回到那一张，再去问这样子，好不好？然后有需要学术的，真的不用客气，有系上老师可以帮忙这样。那我们就开始今天的，那我想那个老人是一个，就是是一个现在很重要的议题，那我们每一个人也都会的。 那 Professor Roger 他今天跟我们讲，就是去and就是他利用现在的科技来去帮忙我们去做一些检测这样子。那我想是非常重要的一些。那来做康
Professor Roger 你好。Right, I can't speak Chinese. So that was my one Chinese one. I hope you can understand me when I speak English. Can you hear me?
Yes.
It's not quite the right place. Good. Okay, thank you very much for the invitation. I see some familiar faces, but I see some different people here today, so it's nice to meet you. I'm going to talk for around an hour or so, maybe short of time on research and feeding difficulty and dementia, mainly feeding difficulty, not so much nutrition. And then we're going to have a break, and then we'll come back and talk about telemonitoring afterwards. Right, so I've been interested in feeding difficulty and dementia for, I realise now, 30 years since I first began taking an interest in this area when I became a staff nurse, a new registered nurse in care of the elderly unit in the UK. And I noticed at that time that we were getting more people with dementia, and that one of the major problems they had was feeding difficulty. And we didn't know what to do about it. And to be honest, we still don't know what to do about it. But there has been some progress made. So I'm sure you realize that more people are getting dementia all the time because the population of the developed world is aging. We're getting more older people. More people look like me with this color of hair. And therefore, more people get dementia. And it's reckoned that every 3.2 seconds, let's make that 3 seconds, every 3 seconds somebody is diagnosed in the world with dementia. That's quite a thought. So by the time I've said the sentence, that's three seconds have gone, someone else has discovered that they have dementia. So it's a growing problem, and it's one that we really have to learn to deal with. And of course, feeding difficulty and nutritional problems aren't the only issues with dementia, but they are a major problem. And the number of people living with dementia around the world, so it's reckoned by in 2050.
那我其实我们人是创造它的，所以其实还是你可以借由它，然后应用它，然后让我们的生活更便利、更美好这样子。那 So let's welcome Professor Roger Watson to talk about telemonitoring of older people.
Okay, thanks very much.
listening to me again for another hour or so. I'm going to talk about telemonitoring of older people, mainly. I'm going to use some other examples as well. I'm not actually a researcher in this area, but I do have colleagues at my University of Hull who are. I'm going to cite some of their research, and I'm just going to look generally at the area of telemonitoring. I don't know if telemonitoring takes place in Taiwan or...
My name is Doug Richardson. I'm joining Captain Gary Demmer on the flight deck today. Together we'll be flying you to Hong Kong in 1 hour and 17 minutes. In-flight service manager today is Tricia. Her and her team of cabin crew will do their very best to make this flight a comfortable one for you. We're just closing the last of the cargo doors and waiting for the last of a few passengers to board. We'll be on our way, expecting an on-time departure and an on-time arrival into Hong Kong. We'll shortly be showing you a safety demonstration video. I kindly ask that you pay attention to this as it contains important information about this Airbus A330 aircraft. I'll get back to you again prior to landing in Hong Kong with an update of the arrival time and the latest weather conditions. We are descending to Hong Kong. The current time there has not changed since we've left Taipei. It's currently 5:11 p.m. We plan to have you disembarking at 6 p.m., which is slightly ahead of schedule. The current weather conditions, 34 degrees and clear skies. On behalf of Cathay Pacific, thank you very much for choosing to fly with us today. Hope to see you again on a flight in the near future. Cabin crew, 30 minutes to landing.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hong Kong. It is a safety requirement that you remain seated with your seatbelt fastened until the seatbelt sign has been turned off. Please be careful when opening the overhead compartments as items inside may fall out. Kindly take all your belongings with you when leaving the aircraft.
Once we do get going this evening, flight time will be just under 12 hours. Weather conditions en route. Generally forecast fine, however, I do recommend you keep your seatbelt and slightly faster while cresting, just in case we do come across some unexpected movement. You are looking to fly in 7 minutes this evening in surveillance. Our team will do the best to make this flight here. Ensure the aircraft safely briefing.
Remember to collect all your belongings when leaving the train.
Let's go, Mama.